Today on Movie Rollers, we review McFarland USA and The Duff. Time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
Yes, you as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, the show is for you. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Greetings. We changed our...
Yes, we changed our salutations.
You confused me.
Threw you off.
We finally watched The Interview.
Yes. Although, do you want to be saying that live?
Slept through
you
it.
You might get hacked.
More than anything. Have you seen it, Yazzie? Yeah.
No.
I mean, really.
I really wanted to.
North Korea would have done themselves a much bigger service to actually let people watch this movie and see how dumb it is rather than creating
really
all
silly.
Of it. It was so bad.
It's so bad.
It's so bad. I mean, honestly, I was hoping that I might get a smile or two. I had a hard time staying. In fact, I gave up. 20 minutes in, I was like, yeah, I'll just take a snooze here and there. It was so stupid.
It's really silly.
One of the reviewers for 50 Shades of Grey said, "Where are the North Korean hackers when you need them?"
I mean, that's spot on. I mean, you know, I wish in some way they'd done the world a service by preventing it being released, because it was awful. And I feel bad, because I think, you know, the movie... It could have had some smart political satire and commentary to make, mm-hmm. and I feel like they've just totally missed the boat on that. You know, if you want to see that kind of thing, you know, go rent Team America
yeah.
And you know you'll get way more entertainment out of that.
And James Franco, I mean, you know, he really needs to slow down. You know, he's just showing up, doing his stuff, moving on to the next movie, and not really adding much. To anything like at the Berlin Film Festival, which just wrapped up, he had four movies there.
Wow.
Four movies. These are not four movies he made. These are four movies of the ones he made, which got selected to the Berlin Film Festival. God knows how many he's made last year. But he just, you know, he needs to...
Well, he needs to be selective. Yeah. I mean, you know, this was tripe. Yeah. And I feel like you called it actually a year or two ago. I remember you saying... James Franco is probably not going to appear in any decent movie ever again, or words to that effect.
Yeah.
And it's turned out to be true, which is such a shame, because I'm a big fan of his. At least his earlier work. He did some really great stuff.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have two films to review today. We have McFarland USA, which I believe we all saw. And then there is The Duff, which Rashmi and I saw. So... let's start with McFarland USA, and this is a Disney movie. It was it's been hyped for a while, actually. I feel like I've been seeing trailers for this for the last, you know, 6 months at least. It's a movie that you know, Disney's obviously putting out there as kind of their big push for the beginning of 2015, and it's basically about a team of cross-country coach in a small California town who transforms a team of athletes into championship contenders. The director is Nicky Caro, mm-hmm. and the movie stars Kevin Costner, Maria Bello, and a number of smaller names. So, guys, what did you think of McFarland USA?
So I've said this before, but I think when a good sports film works, it really works. Is this a great film? I don't think so. Does it challenge or elevate the genre? Not really. Does it reinvent the sports film cliches about underdogs prevailing against impossible odds? No. But I think it has the good sense of being authentic and of having a really good heart. I'm a big fan of this director, and I've said this again and again that Kevin Costner deserves a better career. And I think Kevin Costner, over his very long career, has kind of had at different times milestones with great sports movies, you know, starting back with The Field of Dreams. Mm-hmm. And I think this might add another peg, you know, on his career in terms of another pretty great sports film. And I don't use the word great very often, but I think this movie has the opportunity to truly make something out of the sports film genre. It's about the best kind of the sort of Disney movies that are made in this particular vein. Rashmi?
Yeah, you know, however much we beat up on it, there's something very magical about watching a Disney movie. And this is no anomaly. This is a feel-good movie from the outset. Good character arcs, a story about, like you said, Yazdi prevailing underdogs. Clearly a predictable outcome, or it wouldn't be a movie. But it doesn't make the journey any less enjoyable. I felt so good that when I came out of the cinema. I really enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, this movie, I agree. I mean, I think this movie somehow ends up being more than the sum of its parts, because I think if you deconstruct it, there's nothing here we haven't seen before. The writing isn't particularly good, you know, the story isn't particularly original, but the experience of watching this film is one that will stay with me for a long time. I mean, I think, you know, the movie relies very heavily on Costner.
Mm-hmm.
It relies very heavily on us, you know, buying into to him as a dream, and you know, it follows all the standard plot points. I mean, you know, it's funny when we often talk about this on Movie Rollers, but you know, when we did screenwriting as a class, Rashmi and I, there are these beats that movies have to have, and this movie follows them to the letter. You can see them coming, you can see how they're going to go, and yet somehow you still have that giddy feeling in your belly as the finale kind of builds, and all of the notes are hit note perfectly. So a very nice film to watch.
Yeah, I think the movie has a really good sense of place, because it's set, you know, in this really rural, you know, town in Central California, which has a predominantly Hispanic community of farmers, you know, essentially pickers who pick fruit off the farmland. And I think it's hard to do this kind of thing without coming off patronizing or preachy. And, you know, as much as I hate to say this, this is one more film in this long line of, you know, films over the ages about the white guy who comes in and saves, you know, the minorities, you know. And so I think you have to kind of play it carefully. But you never once question, this is based on a real story. I don't know how the real guy it was in real life, but I never once questioned Kevin Costner's character. He was so believable. He was broken. He was fighting. And even the first 10 minutes of the movie, which build to why he lands up there, because, you know, he's a coach, and he's not the kind of coach who's going to shut up and put up with players being players and being divas. And, you know, he speaks his mind, and he happens to, you know, speak his mind to one of the players, and he gets fired. And I don't know, there's a sense of authenticity to the whole proceedings. And I think it comes down to this is the director who made the movie Whale Rider a long time ago from New Zealand. And it's a really weird choice to pick a New Zealand female director to make a movie about a sports movie set in Central California. But it's so effective, because I think one of the reasons why the movie works is because every character completely walks away from stereotype. Even though, you know, these are the underdogs, each one of those five or six runners has a character. They have a story. They have, granted, a very superficial trait, but there is the fat kid who can't run, but he's the heart of the team. And then there is the guy who is, you know, he thinks too much of himself. And, you know, I don't know, it even though it's crossing off, you know, the same lines along its run, it's all done very, very authentically.
Yeah, I think there's a really good narrative here without being pushy or even taking a stance, mm-hmm. around immigration, around class, around what it means to be American. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very difficult to do, but Disney somehow has managed to do it and left you to make up your own mind without it being shoved down your throat. I mean, I was literally smiling from ear to ear for most of the movie. And of course, when I came out, I wanted to hug everyone and get a burrito, because I think that's what Disney does. I mean, I really believe
that's a quote.
I believe that wars could be won with Disney movies.
That needs to be on the poster. Rashmi from Movie Rollers. I wanted to hug everyone and get a burrito.
And I think...
But I know how you feel. I mean, right? I know how you feel.
But I think the thing that amazed me most about this movie was this had some incredible cinematography. And I didn't expect that from a Disney movie, although I should, because they do all of those nature movies. beautiful, beautiful scenes of vistas and fields and mountains. Really just took my breath away.
It's an interesting point. I mean, it was very nicely shot. I mean, I didn't think about that at the time, but I think, you know, Yazdi made the point earlier that it really does take you to this place in Podunk, you know, USA, California, some place that is really off the beaten track and is essentially as close to, you know, third world levels of poverty as America seems to get near to. So, you know, that was interestingly done. I mean, I think my only real poke at the movie is that, you know, while it, you know, straddles that racial cliche line, occasionally it fell down a little bit on the wrong side of it for me. It, you know, you had the standard ethnic mix of characters that you have in any kind of ethnic community. You have, you know, the bossy mother who, you know, is obviously, you know, keeps everyone coordinated. There's just too many of those little things in there, and I don't think it had as many good things to say about the culture and their environment as maybe it could have. And the immigration thing was completely ignored. That being, you know, a struggle, I think, that a lot of these families and communities have to deal with, they didn't even touch that. But then the movie was never going to be about
that. But I think the immigration, when I talk about immigration, I don't mean about the illegal immigration. I meant about the first generation of people coming to a country and their thoughts on the value of education, right? And that fine line between having to make a living because you've got to put food on the table and the wasted time because you've never really had anyone go to college in your family. That immigration piece, I think, was beautifully played. Yeah, I've had people in my own family have those conversations. Luckily, not my parents, but I mean, I've heard those conversations when we were growing up as, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I think a film like this will do more good about educating people about immigrants and their children working in fields so the rest of the country can get their produce cheaper than any kind of public service announcement. I think this movie deliberately avoids being very political, but just in showing the lives of these kids, I mean, the whole premise of the movie is that he goes to train a football team, but he finds out that these kids actually are remarkably good runners. And the reason why they're very good runners is because before and after going to school, they have to go to the farms where they're picking fruit and they have to rush to make it to school on time. And then after school, rush back to the farms to help their parents. And that's why they're such good runners. And then he realizes that they would make a great cross-country running team. And, you know, just by showing this in a very clean, unobjective light, it does, I think, wonders to make people understand the whole immigration issue, I think. So you know, because you can so easily politicize this or make it be angry or any of those things, and it does none of those things. And, you know, I agree. I wish the movie was a little bit less prone to cliche. And at 2 hours and 10 minutes, it is a little bit on the longer side. I wish the script had been tightened up a little bit. But all of those character arcs work. Every single one. You were talking about the bossy mother. You know, that works. I think there's a wonderful, I mean, it's, even as I'm saying it, it's full of cliche. There's the part where Kevin Costner gets invited to go home and eat at the home of one of the pickers and their family. And just that interaction,
beautiful.
It shouldn't have worked. It should have had all of us rolling our eyes. Like, here is, you know, here we are being taught a school lesson about integration and all that. But it's just done right. It works. It's completely effective.
I had tears in the corner of my eyes many times through the movies, as much as I had the smile.
Yeah.
Okay. So before I say something else about what it made me want to do, let's wind this one up. So, Yazdi, you go first.
I mean, this is a surprisingly effective film. It's going to be a crowd pleaser. I'm just so happy that, you know, Kevin Costner gets to show the world again what a great actor he is. And like you, Rashmi, I cried even as I knew that the film was engineered to do just that.
Yeah.
But when a film has heart like that, you don't have a choice but to just give in. And this movie played me like a piano. Again, I'm tempted to give this one a 9 out of 10. It really affected me. Oh gosh, I'm going to give it an 8 or 8.5 out of 10 and back down to an 8. But honestly, I mean, I would recommend this movie to rats in my kitchen if I had rats. I mean, I would recommend this movie to everyone. There isn't a person I would not recommend it to. It just has its heart in the right place, and call it schmaltz, call it whatever it is. But what a finely done piece of work.
Joe.
Yeah, it's just shy of being a little overly sentimental, but it is just shy of that. And so I think it stays on the right side of that line, and a movie that right from the get-go, you know, it telegraphs its ending to you from the opening scene. You just know how this is all going to come together. But it just works, and like I said earlier, it seems to be more than it seems. It affects you in a way that it doesn't seem somehow to earn its way to. So I mean, a fabulous time at the movies, a rock solid 8 out of 10.
Universal eights. I mean, there's nothing not to love about this movie.
Yeah, go see it, people.
Come I was going to say, you know, 8 burritos.
You know, somebody posted.
It made me hungry.
Somebody posted on Facebook that, you know, it's a wonder that we pay money to watch the drivel that Hollywood pushes on us. I agree with you, but, you know, go spend your money. This is good drivel that Hollywood is pushing.
Yeah,
if you have to pick a studio film, go see Kingsman, go see McFarland. It's not all, you know, doom and whatever.
And I think McFarland is a good family movie, right? There aren't many films that are good universal family movies. I think everyone from, you know, young Lucy to grandma are going to enjoy this movie together.
Yeah. Again, I think a bit...
And then they should eat together.
They should eat together afterwards, yes. And again, a bit of missed opportunity when it comes to marketing. This movie should have been marketed like The Blind Side. Why is it coming out in February?
You're right.
You know?
Yes.
I mean, it's got a big actor.
That's
it's got
really
Kevin Costner.
Good point.
But anyway, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe I think Costner, you know, it may not have been an Oscar-worthy movie, but, I mean, there's some recognition here for what he's done. Yeah. With that character, I really felt that, in spite of the way that it was, you know, that in spite of its predictability, his character was so believable.
And even Maria Bello, who plays his wife, she's never turned into a shrew, or she's never screaming or yelling just to create conflict. And I kind of appreciated that, you know, because you're tired of he faces difficulties on the job. He faces difficulties with his wife, who doesn't understand being in this strange new place. And it doesn't go that route. It would have been easy for the movie to do
that.
Yeah, I
agree.
I like her very much as an actress, actually. She has a very weathered look to her, but she's, you know, she shows up in everything. Yeah. And
you just
and
believe
she's
her.
Always good.
You always believe her. Yeah.
I loved her in Coyote Ugly.
And what was that movie she was in with William H. Macy? Oh, God, she was so good in that. But anyway, I'll find out.
All right, movie number 2 of the week is The Duff.
So The Duff is a movie from first-time director Ari Sandell. And interestingly, Ari Sandell, his only claim to fame was that he actually directed one of the Oscar-nominated live-action movies several years ago.
Oh.
And now, you know...
Live-action shorts.
Live-action shorts, yes, which was nominated for an Oscar in 2008, I believe. And here he is now, you know, getting his first chance at directing a Hollywood movie, which is The Duff. And according to IMDb, of which I'm reading because I have not watched this movie, The Duff is a teenage comedy which is set in the high school area, where a high school senior instigates a social pecking order revolution after finding out that she herself has been labeled the Duff, which is the designated ugly fat friend to her prettier, more popular friends. The movie is written by Josh Kagan and Cody Keplinger, and it stars Mae Whitman, Bella Thorne, and Robbie Amell. I could not see this because I had a conflict at work, but I know the both of you did, so what's with The Duff?
So this is no John Hughes teenage drama full of angst, and I don't think it's even as clever as Mean Girls, and it's so super predictable from the very first scene, but it's so much fun, and I had a really good time watching it, and it has a lot to do with how endearing and charming the main protagonist is.
This is the kind of movie that I don't really like to review, because I think it's aimed at an audience that's just a little, you know, younger.
What are you saying about me?
I know, right? But it really is aimed at the high school kid. You know, it's a PG-13, but it's... And it actually makes use of its PG-13 quite a lot, because I think this is kind of a raunchy type movie for high school. There's you know, just a couple of scenes that I think are... a little edgier than you might ordinarily think. You know, it starts off with this kind of Saved by the Bell type tone, but then, you know, it goes to edgier places, but, you know, at the same time, it doesn't have the intelligence to kind of make it more of an adult movie. So it, for me, it's almost laser focused at the 13 to 15 year old high school kids, and that basically means it's not for me. That was a very long way of getting around to the fact that this movie didn't really work for me, but I don't think that that's the movie's fault. I think I just kept judging it from start to finish. I think it had a lot of mixed messages. I kept thinking of, you know, it has this, you know, the designated ugly fat friend, right? It's the ugly duckling story. So, you know, you have the girl, and, you know, at the end of the movie, she's going to go a certain way, and she's going to become the princess and blah, blah, blah. But the messages all the way through seem to be really mixed. There's some horrendous cyberbullying in the movie. And, you know, the girl seems to kind of wash it off her without any real, you know, consequences. And I kept thinking, if that happened in real life, we would be looking at a movie about teen suicide. I mean, you know, this was really quite a set of strong, you know, cyberbullying type things. So, I don't know, maybe I'm just being a little too judgmental of it, but it, for me, it just had too many mixed messages. It didn't feel funny enough to be a comedy. It was supposed to be kind of a teen drama, I think, in some ways, but it didn't have enough drama elements that, and maybe it was a little bit too lighthearted to be, you know, a drama. So for me, it didn't gel. And, you know, I think there were some funny moments. Like you say, I think the lead character, yeah, the lead actress did a very nice job of all of her comic timing. She reminded me of Amanda Bynes in yeah. many ways. In not the crazy Amanda Bynes that we deal with today, but the one from What I Like About You. But yeah, just not my thing.
Yeah, I think you're being a bit harsh, but clearly you're not the audience. I think you could make the serious version of this movie, which would be Men, Women, and Children, which we saw last year. Mm. And I think the message here is, and you know, clearly, Yazdi, the screening that we went to was practically jam-packed of teenage girls. I mean, people were literally running from their cars from the car parks to get into the line, and the lines were huge. So I think the message is good, Joe, because I read it to be more like, don't worry about the cyberbullying, because that's what people will do. It's just a phase that you have to get through, and ultimately it's not that important. As opposed to, this is going to ruin your life, which we saw more of in Men, Women, and Children last year. I think the message is good in the sense that it doesn't matter what people label you, it's how you feel about yourself. But I guess having been in a girls' school or being educated through a girls' school and being exposed to, you know, girls who are mean, and having done my major growing up through that, I kind of understood the film a little bit better.
Yeah, I really like Mae Whitman, who is the girl who's the lead in this particular movie. She was in, she was in Perks of Being a Wallflower last year. If you remember, she was one of the girls in there. And then she has had a recurring role on
Arrested Development, apparently, as well.
Perhaps Arrested, but also on Parenthood, which was a show which just wrapped up, actually. You know, I've watched the first season of it, and she was remarkable in it. So I'm glad that she's getting a chance to kind of frontline a movie. Is it too heavy with its messaging, or it's kind of played very lighthearted?
Well, that's my problem with it. I mean, I think it starts off being quite heavy. You know, this whole concept of being a duff, right? The idea is that you have, you know, within any social circle, there's one person who is kept within that social circle simply to make the other people look good, right? So if there's a group of three girls, there's two that are prettier than one of the others, but they keep her around because, you know, she might be charming, or she has some kind of utility in the high school, you know, pecking order. And I think that starts off, you know, in kind of a dark place, and then there's all these questions about self-worth and, you know, all the teenage anxieties that kind of play out from something like that. And it never really addresses them, right? I think it just kind of, at least for me, it just has this tonality about it where, you know, then there's the bullying piece and then there's suddenly the end where it all kind of comes together with a nice little bow, and there's no journey through it. I didn't see her character really do any growing up. And again, maybe I'm looking for a bit more than this movie set out to be. You know, it felt like it was going to be some sort of morality tale with some, you know, comedic moments attached, but none of that kind of came across. It just felt like a movie that was just very tonally inconsistent. Mm.
See, I didn't get that. I mean, for me, I think it's hard to do teenage high school comedy without reducing it to smut or it being too overcooked. Mm. But this, for me, really managed to be entertaining and fun. And I think the other smart thing here was that they invested in some funny adults. So Ken Jeong is in this movie, and he's hilarious. As is there's another actor called Romany Malco. Really funny adults. And of course, Allison Janney's in this. Now, Allison Janney, I think, is a little bit typecast at this point in time, being the kooky mom. But for me, investing in those adults in this movie made it not be the teenage comedy, right? Because they added another dimension for me.
I guess I was looking for more of a Pitch Perfect or Mean Girls type movie.
Right.
And that's not what this was.
Pitch Perfect isn't a high school comedy, right? It's a college caper.
Okay, yeah.
So have we tempted you to go and see it?
Not to rush out to the cinemas, but I do want to see it maybe on video.
I think
you
would enjoy it, Yazdi.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a young teenage girl in you somewhere.
Somewhere, yes.
Okay, let's wind it up. So, Joe, give it your score.
Clearly not for me, but I do think it resonated with its target audience. I mean,
Rashmi,
yeah. The yelps and smiles and laughs that the movie got all the way through. And even as we were walking out of the screening, you know, I think there are a lot of kids within the right age range that were there. Be warned, it's not for younger kids. I mean, it's a PG-13, and it's definitely a PG-13, not just because of the one F-bomb that a PG-13 is allowed to use that it throws in there, but there's a couple of moments which I thought were a little kind of raunchy for a movie that felt initially aimed at younger, you know, high schoolers. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily want my 10 or 11-year-old to watch it, but, you know. But overall, you know, not for me. I'm going to give it a fairly generous 6 out of 10, given my comments, because I think the people at who it is aimed might get something out of it.
Yeah, for me, this was well cast, good physical comedy at times, and the right amount of edge that made it a really fun Friday night decompress. Good solid 7 out of 10.
Yeah, it's doing very well on the Tomorrow Meter.
I really
surprised.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Ken Jeong just had me almost wet my pants. He's so funny.
Really?
Yeah.
But he's cliche in the same
he's
way that you said Allison Janney was.
I mean, yeah, but he's funny, though.
Yeah,
like, his face is funny.
He had some good
and
lines.
And he had some really good lines, yeah.
Is he one of the parents?
No.
Okay.
All right, mail@movieworlders.com. Let us know what you think. Twitter.com/movieworlders and facebook.com/movieworlders as well. If you're not following us on any of those social media services, then get yourself over to your computer right now and log on to facebook.com and follow Movie Wallers. We do interact with folks there from time to time. You'll get news about when our podcasts come out, so join our community and chat with us. We'd love to hear from you. We love to get interactions with any of our listeners on our Facebook page, so do head over to that as soon as you can. Until our next episode, it's Too Many Movies and Too Little Time. Good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.